Hello guys, so after a long time we are back again. So today the book we are going to read is Make Time, How to Focus on What Matters Every Day by Jake Knapp and John Jaradsky. Description: nobody ever looked at an empty calendar and said, the best way to spend this time is by cramming it full of meetings. Or got to work in the morning and thought, today I'll spend hours on Facebook, yet that's exactly what we do. Why? In a world where information refreshes endlessly and the workday feels like a race to react to other people's priorities faster, frazzled and distracted has become our default position. But what if the exhaustion of constant busyness wasn't mandatory? What if you could step off the hamster wheel and start taking control of your time and attention? That's what this book is about. As creators of Google Ventures, renowned design sprint, Jake and John have helped hundreds of teams solve important problems by changing how they work. Excuse me. Building on the success of these sprints and their experience designing ubiquitous tech products from Gmail to YouTube, they spent years experimenting with their own habits and routines, looking for ways to help people optimize their energy, focus, and time. Now they have packaged the most effective tactics in a 4-step daily framework that anyone can use, systematically design their days. Make time is not a one-size-fits-all formula. Instead, it offers a customizable menu of bite-sized tips and strategies that can be tailored to individual habits and lifestyles. It isn't about productivity or checking off more to-dos, nor it does is propose unrealistic solutions like throwing out of your smartphone or swearing off social media. Making time isn't about radically overhauling your lifestyle. It's about making small shifts in your environment to liberate yourself from constant busyness and distraction. A must-read for anyone who has ever thought, if only there were more hours in the day. Make time will help you stop passively reacting to the demands of modern world and start intentionally making time for the things that matter. Well, the description looks great, so let us deep dive into the book. Here you go. Has Make Time by Jake Knapp and John Jaradsky been sitting on your reading list? Pick up the key ideas with this quick summary. In modern life, it often feels like there are never enough hours in a day to do the things we really want to do. If we are honest with ourselves, though, we will see that culprit isn't just the modern world, it's also ourselves. We often make ourselves busier than we have to be. Then, when we are done being busy, we spend the rest of our time glued to social media, television, and email. To regain our time and pursue the activities and projects we have been putting on the back burner, the solution, it would seem, is simple. Stop being busier than we have to be and avoid the distractions that are whittling our days away. Of course, these things are much easier said than done. If we want a real fighting chance of doing them, we are going to need to understand the underlying causes of busyness and distraction. Then we must implement a strategy to overcome them. To bring the strategy to life, we'll need some practical tactics. Over the course of this book summary, we will look at why we are so busy and distracted, why productivity and willpower alone aren't enough to solve the problem, and how to develop 4-step strategy to regain our time. To implement that strategy, well, then look at sampling of 20 of authors' 87 time-making tactics, which you can use to create a personalized approach to taking back your life. In the summary of Make Time by John Knapp and John Jaradsky, you'll learn the identities and hidden nature of dynamic duo of time-wasting supervillains, the busy bandwagon and the infinity pool. Why striving to be more productive can make you feel like you are just running faster on a hamster wheel. A nifty trick for avoiding caffeine rushes. Why do we feel like there is never enough time to do the things we really want to do? The simple answer could seem to be that there is just too much to do on any given day. Too many emails to answer, too many meetings to attend, too many Facebook posts to keep up with. But that's only partially true. The full truth is that our lack of time is some extent self-imposed phenomenon at work here. The first is the busy bandwagon. This is the most modern mindset that tells us that we must squeeze as much work as possible into every moment of the day. It adjusts us to constantly productive, resulting in overloaded inboxes, jam-packed calendars, and never-ending to-do lists. The second phenomenon is the rise of infinity pools. Even you have been hiding in an underground bunker for the past decade, you are mostly like already familiar with these. Think Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, YouTube, Netflix, or the new websites, instantly available with a mere tap of the screen or click on the mouse. They are essentially apps and other digital sources of limitless, inexhaustible, constantly replenishing content, whether it be information, entertainment, or a bit of both. As anyone who has encountered them knows firsthand, these infinity pools can be quite the time wasters, and statistics back this up. On average, we spend 4 hours watching television and another 4 hours staring at our smartphones per day, the equivalent of full-time job. Now combine these second job with your actual full-time jobs, which are hectic enough by themselves and often spill up into your non-work because of the busy bandwagon. Well, it's clear where all the time goes, right? What worse is the busy bandwagon and infinity pools. Have joined forces to become a tag-teaming duo of time destroyers. Exhausted by the busy bandwagon, we are here easily enticed into plunging into the infinity pools and passively soaking up their content. The result is endless tasks and endless distractions, with us bouncing back and forth between the two all day long, day in and day out. So the question is, how do we escape? Well, that's what the rest of the book summary is all about. First, we look into what not to do, then we look to what to do. As a busy bandwagon careens down the road of the modern life, it is followed by procession of gurus hawking various organizational systems, each promising you a more productive way of getting your work done. The thinking behind these systems follows a pretty simple formula. You have certain quantity of work to do, let's say it X. If X amount of work fills up all your time, then solution seems simple. Do X faster to have more spare time? Unfortunately, X is a variable rather than a constant, so things aren't simple. In today's always asking for more world, there is an endless series of tasks we could be doing. So whenever you finish one task, it gets replaced by another. You empty your inbox, another email appears. You field one request, a colleague makes another. Consequently, you can rush through your to-do list as quickly as possible, hoping to reach the mythical endpoint. But the ink on your last check mark would barely dry before another item materializes. The more you get done, the more you find to do. It's like chasing a carrot on a hamster wheel. You can run faster and faster, but you never reach it, because the wheel just spins faster and faster too. The more productivity thus leads to more busyness. It also reinforces the mentality that you got on the busy bandwagon in the first place. By focusing so much on getting through your to-do list as quickly as possible, you are not just setting up yourself as a failure by giving yourself an impossible task, but you're also putting busyness on a pedestal. And you're putting yourself on a back burner. To see why, think about where the tasks of your to-do list come from. Are there things you should choose to do if you were left to your own devices? For the most part, no. There are things that others have imposed on you. There are other people's priorities, not yours. By prioritizing them, you are deprioritizing yourself. And as you subordinate yourself to other people's priorities, you lose time and energy for your own passions and projects. You end up postponing them to another day, which never comes. exhausted by running on the hamster wheel of productivity, making no further progress toward, you will be especially prone to failing into the infinity pools of distraction, which we will turn to next. If you don't want to get stuck in an infinity pool of distraction like Facebook or Twitter, couldn't you just refrain from entering into the pool in the first place? Use your willpower and just say no. Unfortunately, the idea of just saying no is wishful thinking. Infinity pools have been expertly designed and suck you into the endless content. The companies that make themselves have a vested interest in doing so. The more you use their apps, the more money they make. Armies of talented, well-meaning techies jump into action using complex data measurement techniques to see what captures your eyeballs, because it's much easier to redesign and relaunch an app than, say, a car. They can churn into iterations of their app until they find the one the most irresistible. But don't get too mad at them or at the tech company executives. Motivated by genuine love for technology and the pressure of hyper-competitive industry, they are just trying to do their jobs. You can blame your ancestors. Instead, infinity pools are just taking advantage of how your brains were evolutionary hardwired in prehistoric times. Back then, it paid us to be distractible, keeping us on the lookout for sudden changes in our environment, like a rustling bush prevented us from getting eaten by saber-toothed tiger. In those days, we lived in a tight-knit tribe, so it's all paid by the fascinating by stories, gossip and social status, which could help us learn from each other, keep abreast of tribal news and know your place in the tribal pecking order. Finally, going out to the hunt mushrooms or gather berries, men never knowing exactly when or where you might get lucky. So our brains evolved to be motivated by unpredictable rewards. That way, even if particular valley or patch or shrubs proved mastodon or berryless, you'd keep searching for the food. Back then, these predispositions served us well, but today they make us prey to phone notifications that grab our attentions, clickbait headlines that intrigue us with stories, tweets that relay gossip, Instagram follower counts that quantify our social status, and endless Facebook feeds that promise the unpredictable rewards of interesting links hidden between boring posts. The combination of expertly designed apps and prehistoric shaped minds is too powerful for us to resist by willpower alone. We need strategies and tactics, which we will turn to next. If willpower alone isn't enough to defeat infinity pools, and if productivity just makes the busy bandwagon stronger, how do we escape their clutches? Well, as with vanquishing a supervillain, the answer lies in identifying the ultimate resource of their superpower and taking it away from them. If willpower alone isn't enough to defeat infinity pools, and if productivity just makes the busy bandwagon stronger, how do we escape the clutches? Well, as with vanquishing a supervillain, the answer lies in identifying the ultimate source of their superpower and taking it away from them. That source can be summarized in one word: reactivity. Both the busy bandwagon and infinite pools derive their power from our being unmindfully reactive to external stimuli. A colleague emails you with a question and you feel obligated to respond to it immediately. Your phone buzzes with a notification and you feel compelled to look at the screen. You do these things without even thinking about them, and that's precisely the problem. Riding the busy bandwagon and wallowing in the infinity pools have become our automatic behavioral reactions to professional demands and digital technologies. If we think our minds as computers and our behaviors as program, we could say that unmindfully reactive behaviors can become our default settings. At the beginning of each day, this is how we already set up to respond to the stimuli of demands of technology we'll encounter. This is similar to how when you turn on your phone for the first time, it defaults to sending you certain notifications, displaying a certain background and playing a certain ringtone. If you know how to operate a phone, you know how to reprogram its default settings to change the notifications, background and ringtone to your liking. In the following book summaries, we will look at how to reprogram our own default settings in order to stop being unmindfully reactive, which leads to falling into the traps of busy bandwagon and infinity pools. You might be wondering, Where are we heading with all this? Well, if the problem with our default settings is unmindful reactivity, then its antidote is opposite, mindful proactivity. We'll all start looking at this and how to cultivate in the next book summary. In Homer's Odyssey, Odyssey faces this own version of infinity pools, the sirens. They are winged creatures. They are winged creatures whose bewitching voices lured sailors into crashing into the rocks from which they sank. Sailing toward them, Odysseus was mindful of his own limitations. He knew he wouldn't resist the sirens by sheer willpower. Wanting to hear the siren songs but not wanting to crash into the rocks, Odysseus came up with a simple but brilliant solution. He proactively tied himself to the mast of his ship and made his sailors put beeswax in their ears so they could not react and so they couldn't react to the siren song. That's the simplest way to explain being mindfully proactive. Think and act like Odysseus. The busy bandwagon and infinity pools can be as irresistible as the sirens. However, like Odysseus, we can create barriers between us and them that prevent in their songs from luring us as even us in or even reaching in the first place. There are simple but powerful tactics you can employ to create these barriers. We all get into some specifically later, but now there, here is just one example. Avoid the temptation of scrolling through Facebook simply by setting up a website blocker. At this point, maybe you're thinking, enough already, just tell me the tactics. Well, hold on, just a bit a little longer, because it wouldn't be do any good to just list a bunch of tips and tricks, that because tactics by themselves are not enough. You need a strategy to guide them. That's especially true here, because there is no one size fits all the tactics that's going to work for everyone. Each person is different, and you need to set off tactics molded to the contours of your specific personality. The strategy that comes next will enable you to find a set of tactics that works for you. It is broad in its broad outlines. The strategy is very simple and can be broken down into four steps: highlight, focus, energize, and reflect. In the following book summaries, we will go through each of these steps. By the end, you are all ready to find the tactics through which you can avoid the modern sirens that lure you into wasting your time. I repeat, the four steps are highlight, focus, energize, reflect. As you have seen, more productive doesn't solve the problem of being too busy. In fact, because your to-do list is never-ending, it can make the problem even worse by feeding into the busy bandwagon. You are not going to save yourself time to do what you want to do by giving and more short-term tasks. It doesn't work to get as much as done possible to then neurotically manage your schedule to complete tasks as efficiently as possible. Instead, you are just going to make yourself more busy, which makes your days fly by in a blur and leaves you exhausted by the time you are done with work and chores. Hardly ready to say, write the novel you have always wanted to write and spend some quality time with your family. If focusing on the accomplishment of short-term tasks isn't the solution, then perhaps it is about the long-term goals. But these aren't much help either. They're too abstract, too removed, and they're here and now, too focused on distant future. Now, none of this meant to discourage your to-do list, schedule tasks and goals. Long-term goals help you orient your life journey. To-do list schedules are short-term goals, help you keep track on your progress and get things done along the way. They're important, but they are not just enough to help you to regain your time. There is a sweet spot between your short-term and long-term goals, a goal that you can focus on today, but that can also serve as your guiding star as you navigate it. This is a daily highlight, a sustained activity or project that you will be able to look back on with satisfaction at the end of this day. You may have been asked some version of this question before: what was the highlight of your day? Instead of waiting until the end of the day to see what the answer is, come up with an answer ahead of the time by tweaking it slightly. What do you want highlight of your day to be? Of course, the next question is easier to ask and answer. Next, we will look into some ways to help you yourself answer it. Like Neapolitan ice cream, highlights come in the three basic flavors: important, meaningful, and joyful. Each entails its own approach, so let's go through it one by one. For the first approach, you ask, what, if anything, is my most urgent, absolutely necessary activity or project today? To find these highlights, take a look at your to-do list and email inbox or your calendar. Maybe you can have a client expecting a proposal today, or your daughter needs help with costume for Halloween tonight. Now let's say you need to fill out a 10-minute form today. By all means, finish the form, but don't make it your highlight. For a highlight, you want something that takes about 60 to 90 minutes. Shorter activities don't give you enough time to get it in the zone. For longer ones, you will unlikely to be able to sustain your focus. For the second approach, ask yourself, what will make me feel the most satisfied at the end of the day? This is purely about what you want to do and not what you need to do. Prime candidates for this type of highlight or projects you have been wanting to ground around to, but keep postponing because they are in time sensitive. You usually get the time satisfaction. You usually get the satisfaction something that is either an outlet for a skill you want to use or accomplish something that's important for you. For example, maybe there is a pet project at work you have been itching to get started, or perhaps you want to research potential destinations for that vacation you keep thinking about. The third approach is ask yourself, what will bring me the most joy? The point of being less unmindful reactive and most mindful proactive isn't to construct some sort of perfectly planned day with a goal-obsessed mentality. It's to live fuller and more joyful life. To live that life, sometimes you just need to let loose and do something simply because you enjoy doing it. Whether it will be learning how to play a new song on a guitar, reading a book, whatever floats your boat, give yourself permission to do it. So there are three flavors of highlights and the respective approaches. Which one do you take? Every day you should trust your gut and choose whichever one feels right for you. You must need to assistance with choosing. You might still need assistance with choosing a highlight. In a moment we'll look at some potentially helpful tactics, but first let's go over some advice to how to implement them. In a nutshell, don't try to do all these tactics at once. First one is, what if anything is my most urgent, absolutely necessary activity or project today? What makes me feel the most satisfied at the end of the day? What will bring me the most joy? So finally, you can choose a highlight and you might need assistance with choosing your highlights in a moment. We'll look at some potentially helpful tactics, but first let go of some advice on how to implement them. In a nutshell, don't try doing all these tactics at once. You'll get overwhelmed and probably just give up. That's because you have way too many tactics to do in one go. Moreover, you're not meant to do all of them. You're just supposed to try some of them out. See which ones do and don't work for you. Then keep the ones that work and get rid of the rest. Now let's move on to our first round of tactics. Some of these are self-explanatory, or we will just pass over them quickly. Others we will examine more closely. As a first tactic for finding your highlight, you can write down a list of your priorities and then rank them in your remind yourself as which one is your highest priority. Ask yourself, how can I pursue this today? If you are torn between two potential highlights, then you can use the ranked list in the break to break the tie. As second tactic, you can repeat the yesterday's highlight. Thank you. As second tactic, you can repeat yesterday's highlight if you don't get to it and didn't finish it. Want to establish a new skill or habit or simply enjoyed it so much that you wanted to do it again. Third, you can combine a bunch of little nagging tasks into one big composite tasks. Those are twofold bonus to this tactic. First, it gives you the satisfaction of feeling caught up with the tasks that have been weighing on you. Secondly, by giving it the confidence that you will get around to them someday. These non-urgent tasks can pile up without constantly vying for your attention, thus putting the brakes on your busy bandwagon. As another tactic, you can take up the to-do list and do the task that matters you the most. Finally, you can choose the highlight that are longer project. That's a longer project. Break into steps and string those steps into a multi-day highlight. Hopefully, you will have a highlight by the end of the one of these tactics. Now it's time to actually do it. What is the subject of the next book summary? It is one thing to come up with the not too little, not too big goal and declare, today this will be the highlight of my day. It's another to get around actually doing it. For that, you need to make time for your highlight. Here are some tactics that can help. You can estimate how long your highlight will take to accomplish and schedule it into your day, or go one step further and block off a regular space of time on your schedule for doing highlights, or go two steps further and break down your day into a detailed schedule, perhaps even half hour by half hour, writing in simple things like drinking coffee. This may allow you to get as much as your day you can. Just make sure you write in your highlight and not just your tasks. Alternatively, if you can shift around your commitments or get out of them and make space in your schedule, if you shift these some meetings, you might regain a surprising amount of time. Finally, to reclaim time for yourself at the beginning or end of the activity, you could either become a morning person or more effective night person. That means someone who doesn't just start puttering around day Facebook or YouTube when the hour gets late. These two tactics are easier said than done, so some further advice is warranted. To become a morning person helps you to replicate the conditions of our ancestor life, falling asleep at sunset and waking up with dawn. To mimic this, dim the lights of your room a couple of hours before going to bed, switch your screen devices to night mode and turn off them when you are in the bedroom. Be sure to go to the bed early enough to still get enough sleep before you wake up early of the next day, which you can facilitate by providing yourself with plenty of light. This can be supplied by a dawn simulator, a device that gradually bathes you with the brighter and brighter light in the morning. As for becoming more effective night owl, try setting aside time for your highlight in the late evening or early night before the time arrives. You can estimate how long your highlight will take to accomplish. Alternatively, or go two steps and break down your day into detailed schedule, perhaps even half an hour by half. Just make sure you write this highlight. Reclaim your beginning on each day. Either you could become a morning person or effective night person. Be sure you go to the bed early through enough sleep and wake up early. A dawn simulator device that actually bathes in the brighter and light in the morning. As for becoming more effective night owl, try setting aside your time for your highlight in the late evenings or early night. Before the time arrives, do something that recharges you. When it's time to highlight, log off social media to keep focused. How do you recharge yourself, stay offline and keep yourself focused? We'll look at that next. Now that we have seen some ways to make your time for the highlights, now let's look some tactics to focus on something, avoiding distractions and actually making use of the time. First, you can delete infinity pool cell phone apps like Twitter and Facebook. Don't worry, you'll still have access to your maps, music and other useful apps. For most extreme measures, you can even delete your phone's email app. This might sound crazy, but think about it. How often do you actually write a mail on your phone with its tiny cumbersome keyboard? Probably not that often. Your email app mostly just functions as an anxiety-provoking notification app. So try getting rid of it. Alternatively, install software and website blocking programs to limit the time you can use social media or email or your computer. You can also try more moderate measure. Log out of your social media accounts. That way, when you feel the impulse to check them, check them, you will have to enter login credentials. The extra little hassle will discourage you from using social media unnecessarily, and it will give you a moment to stop, think about yourself if you really want to doing it. Also, instead of keeping up with the news of daily or hourly basis, you can catch up it once in a week. You will be able to little off the hoop, but how much does the news you read, information about decisions you actually have to make in here and now? Can't most of it wait in a week? Some of it's actually pressing, but you will probably hear about these stories one way or other, whether as a proverbial water cooler or in text message alert informing you when the volcano is about to blow. Moreover, when you have a random fleeting questions like who's that actress on the TV show, write it down on a piece of paper and save it for the later. Instead of immediately googling it, the way you will be able to avoid going down a Google rabbit hole of one follow-up question after another, while also feeling secure about you can still do your very important research later. Hopefully some of these tactics will help you avoid distractions. Unfortunately, even if they do help, they won't be of much use if you are too tired to use the time they make available. The next book summary covers to keep the... Hopefully some of these tactics will help you to avoid distractions. Unfortunately, even if they do help, they won't be much of use if you're too tired to use the time they make available. In the modern world, people often act as if the mind was separate from the body, as if the body's purpose was to carry around the mind. Meanwhile, you were busy yourself primarily with the mental tasks of contemporary life, such as navigating computer screens. Of course, anyone with a body knows this isn't true. Whenever you feel mentally sluggish after eating too much food or unclear-minded after exercising, you experience the connection between the mind and body firsthand. So it's clear that the caring of one requires caring for another. If you want to be energized in mind, you need to look after your body. But how? There is much conflicting advice out there. How do you sort through it all? Fortunately, most of these things you need to know are pretty simple and come straight from the human prehistory. Looking at the lifestyles of our ancestors, you see some simple but important factors behind their healthiness. A varied or sparse diet, a sleep schedule that mirrors the rhythm of the day, plenty of social interaction, and nearly constant low-key movement like walking, punctuated by the bursts of more intense activity like lifting heavy objects. That's how humans lived for 1800,000 to 200,000 years on Earth, up till the agriculture revolution about 1200 years ago. Humans are still built for doing all the things just mentioned, but the defaults of human modern life no longer encourage them. Instead, they encourage you to sit around and watch screens, eat processed food, and squeeze in sleep. As a result, lifestyles are no longer in sync with physical needs, and so bodies and therefore brains suffer the consequences, which are considerable. Besides the obvious health risks, you are more prone to getting distracted and losing time when you are low on energy. Whereas you feel ready to tackle nearly anything when you are energized. The key to taking care of your body is to return to the principles underlying your ancestors' way while retaining the benefits of modern life. This isn't about adopting an extreme paleo diet or anything like that, but just making you the evolutionary shaped needs more in sync with your societal shaped lifestyles. The next book summary looks at some tactics that can help you to do, like the key factors of prehistoric ancestors' life. The tactics of taking care of your minds and bodies can be broken down into four categories: exercise, diet, social connection, and sleep. We look at one of these two tactics for each of these. For exercise, remember that we don't need to do a triathlon or anything extreme like that. Just 20 minutes of modest daily activity such as running or swimming is scientifically proven to have important benefits on our cognitive abilities, mood, and overall health. As if really short of time, we don't even need 20 minutes. Research suggests that we can experience greater benefits from 7 minutes of high intensity interval training than from an hour of gentle exercise. In as little as 5 to 10 minutes, we can squeeze in time to re-energizing working out, combining sprints, push-ups, pull-ups, squats, and lifting weights. Regarding diet, eat real food in moderation, like our ancestors did. Plants, nuts, fish, and meat. Here is a simple trick for making serving sizes smaller without feeling smaller. Put salad on your plate first, right in the middle, then add the rest of the meal around it. This way, the whole plate will be filled, but mostly with greens. Also, caffeine crashes each be devastating with your energy levels. So to avoid them, try re-caffeinating but 30 minutes before crash, which is often after lunch. If we wait until we have already crashed, it's too late. The biochemical principles at play here are too little complicated. But the bottom line is that we have to reinforce the old caffeine with new caffeine before an army or drowsiness, including molecules called adenosine, can sweep in and win the battle over the brain. For sleep, avoid the temptation to catch up on it. This messes your internal clock, which disrupts our sleep schedule. Stick to it, wake up the same time every day, even weekends. For social connection, remember that like our prehistoric ancestors who lived in small, tight-knit tribes, we have an innate need to socialize. In today's world, our tribe is our friends and extended family. Hanging out with any of these people can fulfill our need for connection, but some of them are especially good at lifting our spirits. Spend time with these people in particular, but yet share a real healthy meal with them and put the phones away. That way, multiple goals can be accomplished at once: connecting with your tribe, eating well, avoiding infinity pools, and getting off the busy bandwagon. In total, this book summary given you 20 tactics for implementing the first 3 steps of make time strategy: highlight, focus, and re-energize. That's a lot of tactics to try out. With so many tactics to choose from, you might feel overwhelmed. Even if you remember the advice just about trying out one tactic at a time, it might still feel like there is so much you are not covering. Here is one way of fighting that feeling. Think of the tactics as recipes in a cookbook. The first 3 steps of the strategy as breakfast, lunch, and dinner. Each day you try out this one recipe per meal at most. You wouldn't feel compelled to cook your way throughout an entire cookbook, and you shouldn't feel the way about these tactics either. The point of cookbook is to just give you the options to try. You pick and choose the ones that fit your needs. You test them, taste the results, and go there. The same holds true for the recipes provided by these tactics. The point is simply to see which one works for you, so test them out and then observe, record, and analyze the results. To do this, simply take a few moments of every day to note what your highlights was, whether you made it time for it, with tactics you used, what worked and didn't work about them, what changes you could do make them tactics. This is the first step of the make time strategy. To further keep track of how you're doing, you can also rate your focus and energy levels on 1 to 10. And to add a positive spirit to the whole endeavor, you can write down a moment in which you feel grateful. That way, you would be attuned to the positive developments that you may see in your life. If it all goes well, and add a positive spirit to the whole endeavor, you can write down a moment for which you feel grateful. That way, you will be attuned to the positive developments that you may see. If it all goes well, these developments will be considerable. They will give you more time and energy, focus on activities, projects, and people you really care about by freeing up yourself to pursue them. You may even rediscover an old passion or discover a new one. They'll give more time, energy, and focus on activities, projects, and people you really care about. By freeing up yourself to pursue them, you may even rediscover an old passion of discover a new one. Perhaps you may pursue your career with renewed vigor, or perhaps one of your projects or hobbies will blossom into a brand new calling. That's exactly what happened to the authors. One of them left Google to become a writer. The other left YouTube to pursue sailing. Where will your journey take you? There is only one way to find out, and that's to begin. In review, the making book summary. The key message in this book summary is: the main reasons we feel like we never have enough time on the busy bandwagon infinity pools, the ethos that encourages busyness for its own sake, and apps that keeps us distracted with endless communication and entertainment, productivity and willpower alone are not enough to overcome these two forces of time wastage. Instead, we need a mindful, proactive strategy to deal with them. To that end, you can use a variety of tactics to implement a 4-step strategy of choosing a daily highlight, focusing on it, energizing yourself, and reflecting as the results. Start implementing this book strategy today. Review this book summary, select one tactic of each of these first 3 steps, and start choosing a highlight, focusing on it, and re-energize yourself today. Wow, what a great book. I had really, in the middle of the book, it turned out to be like boring, but then it made actually the sense why it has to be this much long. And I understand it's already been 40 minutes. So I hope you all get the necessary vigor through this book and summary. And yeah, that's it. Wish you all the best. Bye.
Hello folks, welcome back. So today the book that we are going to read is about Factfulness by Hans Rosling and Anna Rosling and Erla Rosling. Description: one of the most important books I have ever read, an indispensable guide to thinking clearly about the world, Bill Gates. An outstanding international public health expert, is a hopeful book about the potential for human progress when we work off facts rather than our inherent biases, Barack Obama. Factfulness, the stress-reducing habit of only carrying opinions for which you have strong supporting facts. Then ask it simple questions about the global trends: what percentage of the world's population live in poverty, why the world's population is increasing, how many girls finish school. We systematically get the answers wrong. So wrong. That a chimpanzee choosing answers at random will consistently outguess teachers, journalists, Nobel laureates and investment bankers. In Factfulness, the professors of international health and global TED phenomenon Hans Rosling, together with his two long-time collaborators Anna and Ola, offers a radical new explanation of why this happens. They reveal the 10 instincts that distort our perspective from our tendency to divide the world into two camps, usually some version of us and them, to the way we consume media, what fear rules, to how we pursue progress, believing that most things are getting worse. So the book is amazing, and to get to the summary, exact point what the book is addressing in clear before we are going to read the whole book is, why the world's population increasing, how many girls finish school. We systematically get the answers wrong. So wrong that a chimpanzee choosing answers at random will consistently outguess teachers, our journalists, Nobel laureates and investment bankers. So the point here is, when we are trying to guess something, even though we can make the educated guesstimates, but we tend to be so wrong. It is so random and it is not totally related. So why this happens and how to go about that, that is what the book is addressing about. So it sounds interesting, so let's deep dive into the book. Excuse me guys, for a second, I'm just changing the interface. Okay, here we go. About Hans Rosling and Ola Rosling and Anna Rosling. Hans Rosling was a Swedish physician, academic and public speaker. Alongside Anna, Hans founded the Gapminder Foundation and developed the Trend Analyzer software system. Hans advocated for data analysis as a way of exploring developmental issues. Ola Rosling is Hans Rosling's son. Ola specializes in statistics and is known for his work with Gapminder on changing the global quality of life. He is currently the chairman, director and co-founder of Gapminder Foundation. Anna Rosling is a Swedish designer who developed Trend Analyzer along with the two authors of this book. She is currently the Vice President for Design and Usability of Trend Analyzer, Tendalizer. Plus, she is the founder of Dollar Street, which is a website that helps people visualize different streets of homes. This website helps people better understand how different cultures and incomes live around the world. So, let's start with the introduction. Factfulness is a posthumous book by statistician and physician Hans Rosling. This book is co-written with his son Ola Rosling and his daughter-in-law Anna Rosling. The premise of the book is the most humans are wrong about the state of the world. We all exaggerate the negatives in this world. We believe the world is poorer, less healthy and more dangerous than statistics suggest. Instead of dividing the world into developed or developing, Hans suggests we should have four income brackets. Plus, he outlines 10 instincts that prevent human race from progressing. This book became an international bestseller and was recommended by Bill Gates as one of his 5 best books of 2018. Think about the world: war, violence, natural disasters, man-made disasters, corruption. Things are bad and it feels like they are getting worse, right? The rich are getting richer and poor are getting poorer, and the number of poor just keeps increasing, and we will soon run out of resources unless we do something drastic. At least that's the picture that the most Westerners see in the media and carry around there in their heads. I call it overdramatic worldview. It's stressful and misleading. In fact, the vast majority of the world's population lives somewhere in the middle of the income scale. Perhaps they are not what we think as middle class, but they are not living in extreme poverty. Their girls go to school, their children get vaccinated, they live in 2 child families, and they want to go abroad on holiday, not as refugees. Step by step, year by year, the world is improving, not on every single measure, every single year, but as a rule. Though the world faces huge challenges, we have made tremendous progress. This is fact-based worldview. Hans Rosling. What is factfulness? Factfulness is the stress-reducing habit of only carrying opinions for which you have strongly supported facts. It is a set of tools that will help you process information. First, the gap instinct. 85% of mankind is already inside the box that used to be named as developed world. The remaining 15% are mostly in between the two boxes. Only 13 countries represented 6% of world population and still inside the developing box. The gap instinct relates to how we tend to divide the subjects into two groups. We exaggerate the gap between these two groups by giving them labels like good versus evil and rich versus poor. The most prominent example of the gap instinct is how we identify countries as either developed or developing. These are labels introduced in 1960s. This type of instinct is an us versus them mentality. The reality of the developed and developing labeling is most people live in the middle now. There is no clear gap between the developed and developing countries. Therefore, it is better to place them into 4 income levels. Level 1 would include most, and level 4 would include most developed. Low income countries are much more developed than most other people think, and vastly fewer people live in them. The idea of divided world with a majority stuck in misery and deprived is an illusion, a complete misconception, simply wrong. To adopt a factfulness approach, we must accept the most of our first-hand experiences from level 4. Then our second-hand experiences on other level are based on our mass media. The mass media will always report on the extraordinary events, hence our view on the other levels will never be a reality. The authors outline 3 warning signs that trigger our gap instinct. If you compare averages, you will produce gaps. However, there is often significant overlap in wealth between countries. If you compare extremes, you are not showing the majority of people in a country. If you are living in level 4, then everyone appears much poorer than you. To control the gap instinct, we should look for the majority. The negative instinct. Does saying things are improving imply that everything is fine and we should all relax and not worry? Not at all. It is helpful to have choose between bad and improving. Definitely not. It's both. It's both bad and better. Better and bad at the same time. This is how we must think about the certain state of the world. Secondly, as humans, we naturally focus more on the bad than the good. Hence, we also believe that the world is getting worse. This is not the case. Instead, we misremember the past. Plus, journalists selectively report negative stories. Finally, we tend to respond with feelings instead of facts. This focus on feelings means we feel uncomfortable saying that the world is giving better. We feel uncomfortable because bad things are still happening. We need to overcome this negative instinct by accepting that bad things happen, but the world is still improving. We must not let negative stories that seek to grab our attention trap the world's reality. Plus, we must not look back in the past as if it was perfect. Many bad things happened in the past and we should consider how things have improved. The authors provide 16 examples of bad things that have decreased over time. Legal slavery, oil spills, expensive solar panels, HIV infections, child dying, battle deaths, death penalty, leaded gasoline, plane crash deaths, child labor, death from disaster, nuclear arms, smallpox, small particles, smoke particles, oxygen depletion, ozone depletion, hunger. Plus, they also provide 16 examples of positive things that have become more common on time. New movies, protected nature, women's right to vote, new music, science, harvest, literacy, democracy, child cancer survival, girls in school, monitored species, electricity coverage, mobile phones, water from protected sources, internet and immunization. The reason we struggle to see the world as improving is that matters are often only improving gradually. Hence, we often do not hear about these improvements. To control the negativity instinct, you should expect bad news. The straight line instinct. As humans, we often wrongly assume incidents in the world should move in a straight linear direction. We expect that improvement in the world must be constant improvement with no dips. However, multiple factors impact the trend. The best way for us to control this error-filled instinct is to remember that the curves can come in all shapes and sizes. We must also accept the straight lines as far as less common than we think. If you have two points and connect them, you will have a straight line. However, add a third point that is not perfectly in line with these points, you have a curve. The issue with this misconception is that it assumes that things are a certain way. It also assumes that drastic action is required to change an upward or downward trend. Instead, we look at the data as curve. We can see dips in the upward trend. We can learn from these dips and view them as opportunities to learn. To control the straight line instinct, you must remember that the curves come in different shapes. The fear instinct. Critical thinking is always difficult, but it's almost impossible when we are scared. There is no room for facts when our minds are occupied by fear. Fear was and is hugely important for our survival. However, fear is not useful when considering data. When we are afraid, we have a rapid view of the world. Specifically, we tend to generate worst-case scenarios when provided with data. Evolutionarily, we had to respond to all threats with worst-case scenario approach. This approach to fear helped us survive as a species, but now make us overestimate problems. However, this approach is unhelpful when we are attempting to utilize critical thinking. The media portrayal of events encourages this fearful way of thinking. The news will broadcast the dangers of the world. However, the reality is bad things still happen. That said, the outcomes of these bad things are far less severe than they used to be. This is not reported. Far fewer people are killed today than in the past. Natural disasters are not less common, but fewer people die of them as we better equipped. The events that strike the most fear into us, some of the least common events, plane crashes, murders, nuclear leaks and terrorism. These events account for less than 1% of death every year. In 2016, 40 million commercial passenger flights landed. 10 of the flights ended in fatal accidents. However, our once journalist will report. To control the fear instinct, calculate the risks. The image of dangerous world has never been broadcast more effectively than it is now, while the world has never been less violent and more safe. The image of a dangerous world has never been broadcast more effectively. The image of a dangerous world has never been broadcast more effectively than it is now. While the world has never been less violent and more safe. The size instinct. The two aspects of the size instinct together with the negative instinct make us systematically underestimate the progress that has been made in the world. We tend to overestimate the importance of single events or people. The author provides an example of how people often attribute improvements in child mortality to improvements in doctors and hospitals. We view fewer children dying as doctors, saving more life. However, the data would suggest that almost all the increase in child survival rates are attributed to preventive measures outside the hospital. As humans, we like to make a narrative out of individual data points. The media preys on instinct and will make a single event or fact sound more critical than it is. To overcome the size instinct, it is essential to provide or a fact with context. You can provide context by comparing the event to other examples. Additionally, if we are provided with a large number, we will often attribute more importance to it. This is because we struggle to understand large numbers. Therefore, we make the number more meaningful. We should always divide the total by another number. For example, you can divide the total population. The newer number will now apply to a person. To control the size instinct, get things in proportion and search for comparisons. To avoid getting things out of proportion, you need only two magic tools, comparing and dividing.
The generalization instinct. The generalization instinct can make us mistakenly group together things or people or countries that are actually very different. It can make us assume everything or everyone in one category is similar, and maybe the most unfortunate of all, it can become us jump to conclusions about whole category based on a fewer or even just one unusual example. People automatically generalize individual data points. We use stereotypes as a way to structure our thoughts, and they are generally very useful. However, this instinct can also wrap our view of the world. Firstly, our instinct to generalize can lead us to mistakenly grouping items that are very different from, example, linking two countries together. Secondly, this instinct can make us believe that everybody within one category is the same or very similar. This, coupled with making us jump to conclusions about an entire category based on one example, underpins issues like radical prejudice. The best way to beat this instinct is to experience new places and people. If you travel to new countries and visit their real homes, you will understand we were all unique. Anna Donner Street website points out this idea. People with same earnings will have different cultures, different family dynamics. To control the generalized instinct, you should question your categories. The destiny instinct. The instinct is related to how we assume people, countries, religions, or cultures are destined to be a certain way. The instinct is based on our understanding of innate characteristics. Basing our understanding of others on these innate characteristics leads us to believing that things can never change. The destiny instinct also makes sense from an evolutionary standpoint. We used to live in surroundings that would not change much. The only changes were seasonal ones. Therefore, associating a group with destiny was one of the few ways to unite a group. However, societies are no longer like this. We have ever-changing environment and many circumstances we can connect over. Additionally, we must remember that change is often slow. Things may appear destined, but there is merely because we struggle to notice small changes. Societies and cultures are in constant movement, therefore try to keep track of gradual improvements. If you struggle to understand how things change over time, try to look at your parents' grandparents' views. You will most likely see a tremendous difference, and this is due to small gradual changes. To control destiny instinct, stay open to new data and remember that slow change is still change. The single perspective event. Being always in favor of or always against any particular idea makes you blind to information that doesn't fit in your perspective. This is usually a bad approach if you like to understand reality.
This is usually a bad approach if you like to understand reality. Instead, constantly test your favorite ideas for weakness. Be humble about the extent of your expertise. Be curious about new information that doesn't fit and information from other fields. And rather than talking only to people who agree with you or collecting examples that fit your ideas, see people who contradict you, disagree with you, put forward different ideas as the greatest resource for understanding the world. Ideas of adopting or considering multiple perspectives, we are always focused on single causes or solutions. Focusing on single causes makes us feel like our problems are easier to solve. However, this leads to a misunderstanding of the world. We will get a more accurate understanding of problems if we consider multiple perspectives and weigh up which has most validity. To overcome the single perspective instinct, you should always be testing ideas to see where they fall short. You should not reject new information that doesn't fit your current viewpoint. Instead, be curious about this new information and identify and identify if your ideas should change based on this new information. On top of this, you should actively seek out people who have different viewpoints than you. Having these people in your life will hugely improve your understanding of the world. Finally, the authors encourage you to sometimes look beyond numbers. Data does not have its limits, and real-life proof concepts can be easily necessary when searching for solutions. The world is complex, and our problems or solutions should reflect rather. Finally, the authors encourage you to sometimes look beyond numbers. Data does have its limits, and real life proof of concepts can be necessary when searching for solutions. The world is complex, and our problems or solutions should reflect that. To control single perspective instinct, you should get a toolbox rather than just a hammer. To a hammer that everything looks like a nail. To control single perspective instinct, you should get a toolbox rather than just a hammer. To a hammer, everything looks like a nail. The blame instinct. The blame instinct makes us exaggerate the importance of individuals or a particular groups. This instinct to find a guilty party derails our ability to develop a true fact-based understanding of the world. It steals our focus as we obsess with someone to blame, then blocks our learning because once we have decided we stop looking for explanation elsewhere. This undermines our ability to solve the problem or prevent it from happening again because we are stuck with our oversimplistic finger pointing, which distracts us from the more complex truth and prevents us from focusing our energy in the right places. The blame instinct is our instinct to find clear reason for why something bad has happened. We tend to attribute bad things happening to bad individuals or intentions. This is another example of humans trying to find patterns. We try to find a reason for why something has happened. The blame instinct is our way of dealing with unpredictable, confusing, and frightening nature of the world. One of the most significant issues with our blame instinct is when we exaggerate the importance of individuals or groups in adverse events. This blocks us from seeking more viable explanations or solutions to the problem. In reality, most unpleasant events are a combination of many interacting causes. The authors call this system, therefore we should be looking at something rather than individual people or groups. This blocks us from seeking more viable explanations or the solutions to the problem. In reality, most unpleasant events are a combination of many interacting issues. The authors call this the system. To control the blame instinct, you should recognize the scapegoat when a scapegoat is being used and resist using scapegoats yourself. Plus, you should look for causes instead of villains and systems instead of heroes. Plus, you should look for causes instead of villains and systems instead of the heroes. The urgent instinct is the instinct that makes us want to take action as soon as we perceive danger. The issue with this instinct is it makes us stressed. Stress amplifies our instincts and blocks us from thinking analytically. Finally, stress makes us drastic actions that we would never normally consider. Some problems are urgent and we should work together to solve them. There are global pandemics, financial collapses, world wars, climate change, and extreme poverty. If the problem does not fall under these categories, then urgency will only one way to deal with urgency instinct is to give yourself more time and provide yourself with more information. Additionally, be careful when considering predictions. So to control the urgency instinct, take small steps and insist on getting the data. This is data as you have never known it. It is a data as therapy. It is understanding as a source of mental peace because the world is not as dramatic as it seems. This is data as you have never known it. It is data as therapy. It is understanding as a source of mental peace because the world is not as dramatic as it seems. Factfulness, like a healthy diet and regular exercise, can and should become part of your daily life. Start to practice it. You will be able to replace your over dramatic worldview with a worldview based on facts. You will be able to get the world right without learning it by heart. You will make better decisions, stay alert to real dangers and possibilities, and avoid being constantly stressed about the wrong things. Conclusion. The authors admit that many bad events still occur. In fact, many of the bad things of the past still exist. That said, these bad things are generally less severe than they used to be. So there is hope for the future. Despite this, humans tend to place more attention on the bad things because of the 10 instincts that we must challenge. These instincts are the gap instinct, the negativity instinct, the straight line instinct, the fear instinct, the size instinct, the generalized instinct, the destiny instinct, the single perspective instinct, the blame instinct, the urgency instinct. So if we go once again to the size instinct, two aspects of size instinct become together with negativity instinct, makes systematically underestimate the progress that has been made in the world. We tend to overestimate the importance of single events or people. The author provide an example how people often attribute improvements in child morality to the improvements in doctors and hospitals. We view fewer children dying as doctors saving more life. However, the data would suggest that almost all the increase in child survival rates are attributed to preventive measures outside the hospital. As humans, we like to make a narrative out of individual data points. The media preys on this instinct and will make a single event or fact seem more critical than it is. To overcome the size instinct, it is essential to provide the event or fact with context. You can produce context by comparing this event to other examples. The media preys on this instinct and will make a single event or fact sound more critical than it is. To overcome the size instinct, it is essential to provide the event or fact with context. Additionally, if we are provided with a large number, we will often attribute more importance to it. This is because we struggle to understand large numbers. Therefore, to make it meaningful, we should divide the total number by another number. For example, you can divide the total population, the new number will now apply to a person. To control the size instinct, get things in proportion and search for comparisons. To avoid getting things out of proportion, you need only two magic tools, comparing and dividing. Hans Rosling. Well guys, the book is amazing. In the initial time, I thought it is like kind of repeating a redundant information, but eventually when I was continue reading this book, I got very beautiful insights. Particularly, I like this single perspective instinct, which we often tend to see in most of the events. And statistics is always a beautiful place for a curious mind. So whenever if you have a chance, I would recommend to have a view on statistics. And there are many YouTube videos are also available regarding the statistics and how the things are changing dramatically in the world currently. Well, that's it for today. Hope you had a good time. See you then.